The Whetstone Bridge is a very helpful solution when the power supply of the transducer is a value with respect to the variation of the impedance in the transducer corresponding to the physical phenomenon that we want to measure is very small. In such a case, the relative ratio between the variation in the output voltage and the power supply will be very, very poor, very low, and it will be difficult to appreciate such a variation because it runs the risk to fall within the quantization error of the analog to digital converter. Another situation into which the Wheatstone bridge is useful is when the transducer is sensible not only to the physical magnitude that we want to measure, but also to environmental parameters, such for example the temperature or the humidity or the pressure. In all the cases that we have described, the Whetstone bridge provides a differential measurement. So typically we can employ a transducer that is really subject to the variation of the physical magnitude together with another transducer of the same type with the same characteristics that instead is not subject to the physical magnitude we want to measure. By making the difference between the outputs of the two transducers, clearly we eliminate the dependence on whatever physical phenomenon that is not the one we want to measure and that affects the measurement itself. Since the output is a differential measurement, by making the difference of two similar sensors, the output will be related to zero, and the variation of the physical magnitude we are measuring will be provided both in terms of amount and in terms of direction. In other words, we will obtain a value that says how much the variation of the physical parameter we are measuring is, and if it was positive or negative. Imagine, for example, a couple of strain gauges that, as we repeatedly said in the past, can be mounted so as one of them receives a positive variation because subject, for example, to a force that extends, that stretches it. And imagine another strain gauge that is mounted so as the same force will compress it. We know that the resistance variation corresponding to the mechanical action exerted will provide a positive value for the first transducer and a negative value for the second one. If we are able to carry out an electronic circuit that makes the difference between the two voltages in output from the two transducers, clearly we will have a voltage signal that will be proportional to twice the single variation, that is the single voltage in output from one of the two transducers. That is the final output signal will be more intense, more robust than using only one of the two transducers, and moreover will be related to zero. With this I mean that if no forces or no solicitations are exerted on the two transducers, the two outputs provided by each one will be equal and their difference will be zero. Then, if prevails the action of the first one, the variation will be positive. If the output of the second one will prevail, the output of the electronic circuit will be negative. The Wheatstone bridge satisfies all these requirements, so represents the very excellent solution in cases like the usage of the strain gauges. In slide number 6, a first solution is presented into which the typical characteristic of such a network, you see that we have four sides, is shown. We have one side, for example the left one, into which two resistors are presented, R1 and R2. These are fixed resistors. Instead, in the right branch of the circuit, we have a couple of resistors, R0, that is a potentiometer, and Rx, that is the transducer that we are considering. Clearly, this is a first hypothesis. That is, we are considering only one transducer in such a presentation with an impedance variation that corresponds to the variation of a resistance when a physical phenomenon that must be measured happens. The first operation that is necessary to be performed in the bridge is the modification, better the tuning of the potentiometer, so as to have in output zero when no solicitation is given to the transducer itself. We say that in these conditions the bridge is balanced. So let's see what is the value of the output voltage that is given by the difference of the two voltages that can be taken in the two middle points of the two branches in the bridge. So considering the left one, we have to consider the partition of the voltage E, the power supply, onto the two resistors R1 and R2. And the corresponding voltage in that point is E multiplied by R2 divided by the sum of the two resistors R1 plus R2. In the right point that is considered for evaluating the difference in output, we will have the same idea applied, however, to the resistors R0 and Rx. So the output will be E multiplied by Rx divided by R0 plus Rx. So if at the beginning we tune R0 so as U is equal to 0, this means that the two terms we have written into the equation are equal, and this brings to a condition that says R2 multiplied by R0 plus Rx0 equal to Rx0 multiplying R1 plus R2. With the Rx0 we indicate the condition of the transducer when the process, let's say, is at rest. From this equation it is easy to obtain that R2 divided by R1 must be equal to Rx0 divided by R0. That is, considering the two branches of the network, the ratios between the resistors must be equal. So the ratio between R1 and R2 must be the same as the ratio between R0 and Rx. Now, we can suppose that we exit from the steady situation of the process, we have a variation in the physical parameter, and this variation reflects in a modification of the resistive value of the transducer. That is, Rx becomes equal to Rx0 plus the Rx. The Rx is the supposed variation in the nature of the transducer, in the resistive nature of the transducer, but we suppose that this variation is not very high, instead is small compared to the values of the resistor at rest, Rx0, and the corresponding value of the potentiometer. This makes the equation that we have previously evaluated to become equal to E that multiplies R2 divided by R1 plus R2 minus Rx0 plus the variation divided R0 plus Rx0 plus the variation. So, replacing the ratio R2 divided by R1 plus R2 with the condition that we have obtained in slide 6, balancing the bridge, and performing very elementary calculations, we obtain a final equation that is the one shown in slide 7, minus E that multiplies R0 dRx divided by Rx0 plus R0 power 2. That shows an unexpected, let's say, dependence of the output voltage on the square value of the sum of the two resistors in the right branch, but shows also that there is linearity between the output voltage and the variation of the resistance in the transducer. This linearity, however, is only apparent. In fact, such a kind of value has been obtained on the basis of the hypothesis we did that the Rx is much smaller than R0 and Rx0. Instead, and you see this with the symbol of the approximation made in the final output of the formula of the recipe. Performing instead the correct and real calculations in the equation, we will obtain that when the Rx becomes not small but significant with respect to the original value of Rx0, the relationship between the output voltage and the Rx becomes not linear. In the slide, a diagram shows the relationship between the output voltage and the variation of the resistance. In the vertical axis, for sake of simplicity, we have reported the negative value of the output voltage just to take into account the minus sign of the output voltage as it can be seen from the formula we have previously described. In the left part of the diagram, we have the minimum possible variation in the resistance of the transducer, that is the one that will bring Rx equal to zero. In other words, the minimum possible delta Rx will be equal to minus Rx0, the rest value of the resistor. Corresponding to this quantity, in the formula shown in slide number 7, the second term Rx0 plus delta R x divided by r0 plus rx0 plus delta rx will be equal to 0. And only the first one, r2 divided by r1 plus r2, will remain. But replacing it with the ratio we have defined in slide 6 to balance the bridge, the ratio r2 divided by r1 plus r2 can be also expressed as rx0 divided by rx0 plus r0. Conversely, let's suppose that delta rx becomes very high, let's say tends to infinite. But what does it happen to the expression of the output voltage when delta Rx tends to infinite? Clearly, looking at the last value, we could conclude that the output voltage becomes infinite, but this is not realistic, this is not possible. And we have to remember that this value is an approximation obtained by making the hypothesis that delta Rx is very small. That is not the case we are considering. So let's go back to the original expression of the output voltage, that is the difference between the two values expressing the partition of the power supply E onto the two branches made by the two couples of resistors R2, R1 and R0, Rx. When delta Rx becomes infinite, the second term in this difference will become close to 1. And R2 divided by R1 plus R2 minus 1 will turn out into minus R1 divided by R1 plus R2. Now we have to remember again the balancing expression we have obtained in the previous slide, that is R2 divided by R1 is equal to Rx0 divided by R0. This allows us to replace R1 divided by R1 plus R2 with R0 divided by Rx0 plus R0, as shown in the diagram. This means that the road, let's say, with which the curve reaches this last value, starting from the minimum possible one, is not linear. So the slope is not constant, and clearly this is not the curve that typically we want to have in electronic circuit and even in a measurement system, because as we have repeatedly said, the non-linearity will not provide a good conversion in the successive ADC stage. So we can conclude that such a kind of circuit can be used only when the Rx is small, that is when small variations in the, in this case, resistance value of the transducer are considered due to the physical phenomenon that we are measuring. These small variations more or less correspond to the green circle shown in the diagram, again in slide 7, that corresponds to a variation of delta Rx in the range minus Rx0 plus Rx0. In this range, we could say that the variation of the resistance will provide an output response of the bridge that is linear without affecting the successive conversion stage, as we have said. This limitation doesn't exist if we consider the circuit shown in slide number 8. In this case, in the right branch of the network, we have two resistors, RX1 and RX2, that feature opposite variations in the resistance value with respect to the physical solicitation, the physical variation of the magnitude we are considering. In other words, we are expressing RX1 as RX0, the rest value, plus delta RX, and RX2 equal to RX0 minus delta RX. In the left branch, the situation remains the same as before, and for sake of further simplicity, we take the values of the two resistors equal. This means that the output voltage U will be equal to E, the power supply, that multiplies 1 divided by 2, since the two resistors in the half branch are equal, minus RX2 divided by RX2 plus RX1. Expressing the values of the two resistors, we will obtain 1 divided by 2 minus RX0 minus delta RX divided by 2RX0. Of course, all the values in the brackets are multiplied by the power supply voltage, and finally we obtain E multiplying delta RX divided by 2RX0. That is, the output voltage is linearly dependent on the variation in the resistance of the transducers, and this expression is valid for every variation we are considering without limitations in the negative range or in the positive range. And of course, we cannot suppose that delta Rx can become infinite, because there are also mechanical limits in the variation of the physical magnitude we are considering, if, for example, we are thinking about strain gauges. But the expression is linear, not like in the previous case, that is linear, but under certain hypotheses. Another interesting property that such a kind of version of the bridge provides is the possibility to eliminate in the output of the bridge the sensibility of the transducers to environmental parameters. The typical case into which this happens is the sensibility to the temperature. If we consider that due to the sensibility or to the temperature, the two resistors will add two more terms that are provided by the temperature. So imagine that RX1 will be equal to RX0 plus delta RX plus another delta R, but depending on the temperature. And the same quantity is present in RX2. Clearly, since the output U is the difference of the voltages present in the left middle point of the left branch and in the right middle point of the right branch, this sensibility, since it will be present in all the resistors of the bridge, will be eliminated due to the fact that the output voltage is the difference of the voltages taken in those points. And this is important because it assures that the measurement will be the same if the physical effect measured is the same, whatever is the particular condition of the surrounding environment, or whatever is the moment in the year into which we perform the measurement. And similar considerations could be made if instead of the temperature we consider the sensibility to the pressure, or I mean atmospheric pressure, or to the external humidity. Again, with such a kind of differential network, we can avoid any influence of such a kind of parameters into the final measurement. We can also imagine that the power supply is provided as alternate current. In case of a resistive bridge, no further considerations must be made, because everything is equal to what we have said till now. The only point is that the output voltage U will be alternate as well, so we will need a rectifier to evaluate the continuum maximum value of the output waveform as dependent on the delta Rx variation. Instead, if the nature of the transducers that are employed is not resistive, but for example is capacitive or inductive, what it is important is that in the same part of the bridge, in the same branch, we have a couple of similar transducers. I mean, for example, that if Rx1 is an inductor, even Rx2 must be an inductor, because in the final formula this will eliminate the dependence on the frequency, and in particular on the J term that of course provides a shift in phase of the output voltages. But if it is present both in the upper impedance and in the lower impedance, in practice disappear. The alternate power supply is useful in particular when we need to limit the offset influence in case of very small delta R variations of the transducers. In slide 9, a new type of conditioning networks that typically is applied to a scenario completely different with respect to the previous one we have seen is presented, and is typically employed when a train of pulses arrives from an external source compared to the port of a microprocessor. This pulse train can be provided from an incremental encoder, for example, or conversely by a group of objects that, for example, crosses a couple of detectors made up by a LED and a phototransistor, and we have that the light sent from the LED to the phototransistor is interrupted every time an object crosses the intermediate line, so as we have a signal that suddenly becomes, for example, zero when before was one, or vice versa, depending on the electronic convention we take, but in any case perform a commutation, and object after object we have a commutation after another commutation, that is the pulse train we are considering in such a case. The problem is related to the frequency with which such a sequence of pulses can arrive. If this frequency is high, the most intuitive solution is to count the number of the pulses, for example, related to a fixed interval of time. The division of the number by the duration of the interval is an estimation of the frequency. And this can be done by a microprocessor, or if we want to avoid to devote the microprocessor to a such trivial task, we can also assign such a kind of accumulation to a counter timer device that will be periodically read by the microprocessor that will be charged to perform the final calculation. That could be the right solution when the frequency is high or very high. In case of low medium frequencies, a different solution is considered that employs still digital components, but without considering a frequent usage of the microprocessor. The microprocessor will occasionally sample the output voltage U, that is shown in the figure, after it has been converted by the analog to digital converter. Clearly, this solution is suitable for phenomena that are not so fast, because as you see immediately at the first sight, it features the presence of a low pass filter, and this means that a certain set of frequencies will be not included, will be not taken into account by a solution like this one. Another problem that such a kind of solution solves is that the characteristics in terms of pulse amplitude and duration of the pulses that arrive from the external world perhaps are not known to the system. So we need a set of devices that transform such a kind of signal in something that can be managed from the acquisition point of view, from the conversion and microprocessing elaboration point of view. In other words, you see that the first stage of this circuit is a discriminator. A discriminator is basically an operational amplifier that compares the value of what receives into an input with a fixed threshold that is present in another input. This means that the discriminator will exit with another signal on-off, so another pulse train, but in this case the amplitude of that pulse and the duration will be known, in the sense that the amplitude will be set by the discriminator itself that has been chosen by us. The duration will reflect the same duration of the pulses that arrive from the external world and will be measured in another part of the circuit. Then such a pulse is sent to a CR circuit. It could be considered an high pass filter, but this is not its role. Its role is to perform a derivative function of the input signal. In other words, this circuit will perform the derivative function of the edges of the input pulse, transforming them in delta in functions in output, while the constant parts of the input pulses will be given back as zero. This justifies the shape of the output signal of this derivative circuit that is sent in input to a monostable. As you can see from the figure, we have two Dirac functions, one positive and one negative, corresponding to the two edges of the input pulse, and three constant intervals that correspond to the part of the pulse that were constant and of course that are set to zero after the derivative function. This signal is sent to the monostable device. A monostable is a digital component that provides an output signal constant in time for a duration that is established by the monostable itself, and even the amplitude of the signal is determined by the monostable. The word monostable means that this device is sensible to only one of the possible edges in the input signal. In other words, only one of the two Dirac delta functions provided to the monostable will excite it, for example the positive one. Corresponding to this signal, the monostable will exit a pulse whose duration is known, since it will be established by the monostable itself, and even the amplitude is set by such a kind of device. Instead, the period will reflect the period of the pulse train that has been provided to the converter, and at this point it is the only unknown parameter that we have to determine. This pulse is given to a low-pass filter. We have already demonstrated that basically a low-pass filter provides the average value of the pulse train in input, so the output voltage will be equal to the product of the amplitude, age, times the duration, W, multiplied by the frequency of the signal, the frequency of the pulse train. The output signal, in fact, is given by the average of the train of pulses, and the average is obtained by multiplying the amplitude of each pulse by the duty cycle, that is the ratio of the time into which it is high, divided by all the period that refers to this pulse. In other words, we have to multiply age by W divided by T. And since the reverse of T is the frequency, this justifies the expression in output, U equal to F times age times W. This signal will be then sent to a digital-to-analog converter, and the output of the ADC will be read by the microprocessor. So, even in this case, the microprocessor is involved in the measurement, but clearly we overcome with such a kind of circuit first the determination, the identification of the amplitude of the pulses that arrive from an external source. Moreover, we overcome also the problem to identify their duration. And finally, we will involve the microprocessor only when sampling the output of the low-pass filter, and since this kind of circuit is devoted to low-medium frequencies, clearly the task that we are assigning to the microprocessor is not so hard. We have presented in such a way two approaches, I repeat, the first one digital, the second one analog. The first one clearly is more accurate and even more fast, more suitable for fast events. The second is accurate only if a sufficient number of pulses is acquired, as every time we perform an estimation by means of an average. Clearly, both the techniques work well at medium frequencies. As I have said before, low frequencies better the second one, high or very high frequencies better the first one approach. Among the conditioning networks, we have clearly all those stages that are devoted to the amplification of the signal. Slide 10 shows a couple of very typical and traditional stages. The first one is an inverting reaction employing an operational amplifier, into which the output is the ratio of the two resistors in reaction to the op-amp. The second stage, the same basically, but the output will feature the same sign as the input, so we have a non-inverting reaction. These topics, I'm persuaded, that have been already seen in the previous courses, in particular in electronic course, so there is no need to devote particular time and to explain particular details about them. And now let's come to a very important problem that sometimes is solved by using electronic circuits. In other circumstances, instead, is charged to the microprocessor software execution. That is, often a signal features a not linear development, a not linear shape. We have already said many times that this is not particularly convenient for the quality and the accuracy of the measurement, but sometimes we have to deal with such a problem. What it is important in these cases is that the relative error could be as a constant as possible. In other words, the problem in this case is that the quantization error of the ADC converter is constant. And if the variation of the signal is very fast into a certain part of the input interval and very slow in another part, clearly the quantization constant error will affect such behavior in a different way. When the variation is very, very fast, the influence of the quantization error is not very important, and the output of the converter will be very differentiated, so as the microprocessor can appreciate in a very accurate way the variation of the signal. Instead, when the variation of the signal is slow, the risk is that this variation will be included into the quantization error, or at least in very few intervals of the converters, of the analog to digital converter, featuring the same quantization error. So the capability of the microprocessor to recognize, to distinguish and discriminate the variations in the input signal will be significantly reduced. If we would be able to keep the relative error constant, this problem could be, if not solved, at least limited. To keep the error constant, we need, in other words, to transform a curve that is not linear at all in another kind of curve that is as similar to a line as possible. Therefore, when the variation of the signal is too slow to be accurately recognized by the microprocessor, it will be necessary to expand it. On the other hand, when the variation of the signal is too fast for the microprocessor, so as the accuracy with which it recognizes the variation is excessive for what it is really necessary, we could think to compress such a variation. A function that provides both these capabilities, compress and expand, is the logarithm, and the circuit that is shown in the figure in slide 11 is a circuit with a good response like this. In fact, you see that we have an operational amplifier with a diode in reaction and a resistance, and the output voltage is equal to the logarithm of the ratio between the input signal and the product of the resistor time the current necessary to polarize the diode. The reaction is inverting, so we have a minus sign, and we have also a constant that eta Vt that takes into account some parameters typical of the diode. If you remember, we have the Boltzmann constant, the temperature, and the electron charge. But in this case, this is not important. What is important is that the output is basically the logarithm of the input signal. And let's see an example into which this kind of transfer function could be very useful. Let's imagine to have a curve provided by a transducer into which the dependence between the physical parameter and the relative voltage output is not linear. Like in this case, we could say that it is more or less parabolic or exponential. I'm talking about the picture in figure 12. Delta T is the magnitude on the x-axis, and Vt is the magnitude on the vertical axis. This is basically the output of a thermocouple, if you remember. And now let's transform this signal by giving it in input to a circuit like the previous one that features a transfer function more or less similar to a logarithm. It is, let's say, reasonable to expect that the output final voltage after this stage is linear or very close to be linear. I mean the third diagram that we see in the slide 12 that expresses the relationship between the temperature delta T and the output signal Vo zero obtained by giving the Vt original input signal as it comes from the transducer in input to the circuit with the diode in reaction to the operational amplifier. This solution is very appreciable. Of course, we have transformed in such a way the signal, so it will be necessary that the microprocessor is aware of this and will perform a counter transformation after the acquisition from the analog to digital converter. Clearly, this solution solves the problem of the quantization error in the ADC, that of course will affect those parts of the input signal that are very, very slow into their variation. The case shown in slide 12, however, is a very lucky case because we found an electronic circuit whose transfer function is exactly what we need. Is exactly a mathematical function that compensates for those parts of the input signal that are not suitable for the successive conversion stage. In other situations, however, this is not possible, and we have to adapt the transfer function of the electronic circuit to the particular shape of the input signal that comes from the transducer. One solution that could be very interesting and useful in such a situation is the one proposed in slide 13, into which we basically propose a not linear amplification of the signal by using an electronic circuit that perform a broken lies approximation. Let's see how it works. The circuit that is shown in slide 13 features an operational amplifier with a first stage into which the reaction is given by the couple of resistors R and R reaction. The gain in this case is given by the product of R reaction divided by R, and the reaction we know that is negative. But the gain can be changed on the basis of those values assumed by the input signal E. In fact, we can see that two other branches in the first part of the reaction can be included, depending if those diodes that are shown in the picture are active or not. And this happens when the input signal E overtakes the two thresholds corresponding to the points A and B. The point A is the point into which the current coming from the VCC power supply and crossing the resistor RE will go into the resistor R4 and from that point towards the minus input of the operational amplifier that is considered as a virtual ground due to the fact that the reaction in such a circuit is still working and the plus input of the amplifier itself is connected to the ground. The same way, the point B is the point into which another current coming from the VCC point through the resistor R2 will go into the resistor R1 towards, again, the minus ground virtual point. The values of R3 and R4 and R2 and R1 will be clearly chosen so as to respect the diagram shown in slide 13 that expresses the relationship between the output voltage U and the input voltage E. Again, for sake of simplicity, in the vertical axis we have drawn the value of minus U that reflects the fact that the reaction is negative. E1 in this particular choice is a threshold that is lower than E2. This means that up to E not reaches this threshold, the two diodes will be not activated and the reaction will be given only by the ratio between R reaction divided by R. But when E overtakes the value E1, that is when the first the diode, the upper diode, will be polarized, the reaction will be between R reaction and the parallel circuit between R and R4. Clearly, in this case, we will choose a resistor R4 that is lower than R, so as in the parallel it will be the prevalent one, and the ratio between R reaction and R4, with R4 lower than R, will be greater, will be a bigger value. Since this ratio corresponds to the slope of the curve in the diagram that we have drawn in the slide, you see clearly that the slope is increasing. Again, if the E signal continue to augment and will overtake the threshold E2, in this case a new third branch in the circuit will be involved, corresponding to the activation of the lower diode. And if the resistor R1 will be chosen so as to have a lower value than R4, and of course than the original R, in the parallel between the three resistors, R1 will be the prevalent, and the gain of the reaction will be mainly determined by R reaction divided by 1, and will be even higher than before. So the slope in the diagram is augmenting. This example clearly shows that by choosing properly the values of R, R4 and R1, we can build a curve as a set of broken lines whose slope is variable, and in this case approximates, let's say, an exponential function or a parabolic function, depending on the specific values of the resistors we have taken and of the corresponding slopes. But the general idea is that we can build, if we want, any kind of curve that we have in mind as a set of successive small broken lines. And this represents a very flexible solution for us to compensate non-linearities in the E input signal. Clearly, such a solution has a limitation due to the fact that the number of the stages that we can add, considering several thresholds and the corresponding activation of the diodes, is not infinite, but after 3, 4, at least 5 stages, clearly the circuit becomes too complicated, where complicated means that it is difficult to keep all the resistors values and the corresponding threshold well balanced. So this solution does not exceed a limited set of broken lines to approximate the desired curve. Another issue that must be considered in such a kind of circuit is about the point into which we have to discharge the current. We said that the minus input point of the operational amplifier is a virtual ground, where we, let's say, temporarily stopped the two currents coming through R4 and R3 and R2, R1 resistors. Said temporarily because those currents need a point into which to discharge, and this point cannot be the minus input of the operational amplifier, that is, as we well know, infinite with its impedance. Those currents, moreover, cannot go to the point into which there is the voltage E through the resistor R, because E will be at least equal or even greater with respect to the two thresholds in the points A and B from which those currents are arriving. So if we don't provide a solution, those currents will end to cross the reaction resistor, altering the gain that we have described before, and the overall curve will be not as we have imagined. The solution is to add to such a circuit a further resistor, R5, connected to a voltage that is very lower with respect to the other ones present in the circuit and even with respect to the ground. This voltage will be minus VCC. The resistor is the red one, and if the balancing among the values of the resistors is correct, it will collect those currents coming from the two vertical branches, keeping the gain in the overall circuit as really determined by the ratio between R reaction and the other resistors that from time to time become active in the circuit due to the activation of the two diodes.